Hello and welcome to our very last and, well, I guess for a little while it'll come back.
At least until next year.
Our last season one batch report. We're so glad that you're able to visit us on this glorious moment. We've gotten through all 16 episodes. Did you think we'd make it? Did you think we'd do it?
For a second there, I didn't. For a second there, I
didn't. I think back starting this, like, I didn't have this computer yet, I don't think.
We started on your iPad.
This while I was still in the iPad in the bedroom. Yeah, the early days. No, this is it. We're at the final. This is episode 16 for Camino Lost, which
it's been 16 weeks.
The finale.
16 weeks.
That's weird. Time is an illusion.
It is illusion.
It's a good time. So, well, we're going to get right into it and kind of talk about it.
I'm ready.
Overall, what were your thoughts of this episode?
I don't know what I was expecting.
We kind of guessed it with it being them.
Yeah, I was expecting to be
the.
I was really expecting there to be more of a resolution in case season one didn't get renewed for another season.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they were like, okay, we don't really know what's going to happen now.
I think they've had this in the bag of like they're going to have a second season and all that fun stuff.
But I was very pleasantly surprised. I really love this episode and a lot of the character moments, and you get a lot of this rounding off of a lot of the arcs we see throughout the season.
Lot of really good conversational pieces, and that's kind of the whole purpose of this episode. There isn't really much that happens, I guess.
It's this is a very emotionally deeper episode than a lot of the rest of them.
I agree. So we'll kind of talk about the quick little bits of it. I haven't watched the episode in a couple days since recording this, so I'm going to try and remember as much as I can.
Yeah, me either. It's
looking
right
at this rundown. So, we pick right back up, and it's literally in the midst of Camino falling apart, and it is just very brutal and very dangerous, and the whole elevator shaft scene when the building fell.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading on Twitter, the Kiner brothers who, composed this, talked about how the scene of the building falling and then hanging off of it was the last piece that they composed for the show. And they said it was the most emotional to them, just kind of rounding it off, because they really hint a lot about like Camino's music themes from Clone Wars into the Bad Batch and just how emotional it was, like composing that goodbye and, listening to it too. That's a beautiful piece.
It's
really
emotional to watch too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just that the drowning of it was, very heartbreaking, heart-wrenching.
Both.
I'm excited for that that second, only episodes 1 through 8 have the music released, so I'm ready for the rest of them to be released, because these last two episodes have had really, really stellar music. So the building falls, and in the building, I know it's more kind of like a quick... I guess action scene, but the scene of Omega and Crosshair, the room they're in is flooding and they gotta get him out. And I really love that Omega instantly just tries to help Crosshair. It doesn't matter.
That's why I love her so much. She is so selfless,
so pure.
Yeah, she just. I think she is like if all of the Bad Batch, she is like a mix of all of them. But if they weren't grumpy, and kind of I just love that she is this pure of heart,
just
like
good natured to the core.
And being a clone is like, it's how could they manufacture someone like that? That moment made me love Omega so much more. And I already loved her a lot. So
I agree.
I love a lot of these moments that we get with Omega and seeing her humanity a lot.
Yes, and that's kind of the theme of this this episode, is discussing where your humanity is prioritized.
Where your humidity is prioritized. I'm going to say like 50%.
That's hot. So the building drowns and they end up on the secret tunnel for the secret lab, conveniently, which I thought was kind of funny. But they, are working through the tunnels and it starts kind of cracking and it's dangerous. And the big fish monster shows up, the alligator thing. That
was like, there's always a big fish.
I remember seeing it. Like, it's the shot where it swims at them and I yelled. I was like, holy.
Freaked out.
No, another really good scene in this is when Wrecker snaps at Crosshair. Mm-hmm. you know, we would have taken you. That we still would have taken you. Hit me to my core. Like, just the look he gives. And it was like, even Wrecker, like, who was shot by Crosshair, you know, is yeah. still like, we would have taken you. Like, it's we would have, like, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, Wrecker also kind of feels betrayed by Crosshair because, I don't know, I feel like a lot of the Bad Batch, it's like a two lane street here, because on one hand, Crosshair feels betrayed because they never, you know, went back to retrieve him.
Right.
But on the other hand, the Bad Batch kind of feels like, Crosshair didn't, because Crosshair's always been this, you know, good soldiers follow orders. He always has to have somebody telling him what's right and wrong. And I think the Bad Batch kind of feels like, well, like, why didn't you resist more? You know, and that's kind of a jerk point of view. But like, also, yeah. I bet that wouldn't have happened to Wrecker. That wouldn't have happened to Hunter. I think that it's because Crosshair was also so, he was so into the order and, you know, being this following orders kind of clone soldier. I think that's kind of the Imperials took advantage of that.
I think it was the realization for everybody that Crosshair prioritized stability and order, whereas the group prioritized the group. And it was really about the people that they were with rather than who was calling the shots. And then they realized what was happening with who was calling the shots.
And also, sorry to cut you off, but also knowing that his chip is no longer in him and he's still doing all of this stuff.
Right.
That's like kind of heartbreaking for them too.
And I think that was kind of the thing, was that I bet you the whole time they were afraid that Crosshair was gonna just be, you know, kind of like what Wrecker was, just this animal, and just, you know, just want to have to kill them no matter what. So they were like, how do you solve that, especially with a super force like the Empire? And then it, you know, Crosshair obviously had changes, but the gang didn't know that, you know. So I think Crosshair holds ill sentiment to things that nobody was able to discuss about, and every time there was something to discuss, it ends in chaos.
When do you think, like, do you think there was a distinct moment where they kind of hinted that Crosshair no longer has his inhibitor chip before it was revealed last episode?
I guess all of the scenes of him, like, getting worked on in the early episodes with him on Kamino, when Tarkin's there, a lot of the early Tarkin stuff, I guess that's when they removed it, but I don't necessarily believe that it's gone. I think it's still there. And I think the reason it's still there is because he still says good soldiers follow orders, you know? Yeah. And I think while he's convinced himself that this is just like how he is, I think the Empire's lied to him. As like a stronghold against him. So he thinks it's all free will, but it really isn't.
That's interesting. Yeah, I don't know. I juggle back and forth between whether I believe him or not. Because I think somehow it could be in Crosshair's nature to, if he feels this betrayed by the Batch and, you know, the Empire has, you know, praised him and given him all this, you know, power, essentially, that he kind of feels like, oh, wait, this is actually, you know, this is what I want. Not having to follow these goons and doing whatever they want. And, you know, because Crosshair has always kind of been like a little bit of an outsider in the Bad Batch anyway. But I wrestle with that. But I also wrestle with, like, why would he immediately, after knowing what the Empire did to him to, you know, do all this stuff, why would he be on their side still?
Yeah.
Because they already breached his trust in, you know, his free will, and he wasn't given a choice.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where I struggle. So I really don't know. I could see it happening both ways, that he did lie about it because the chip is telling him to, or if the chip's really gone and he was feeling like that. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, and maybe even with the chip being gone, he still, like, agrees with his conscious decision, you know? Like, if he thinks it's free will, I guess to a standard, it is free will, you know? He is making some kind of decision, even if that decision, I guess, is influenced.
And I think he's the kind of character in person to, he doesn't want to have to figure out. I heard this. I heard Alex Damon from Star Wars Explained talk about this, how he doesn't want to figure out the answer to what is right and what is wrong. He just wants to be told what is right and follow that order instead of having to figure that kind of thing out for himself. And I think that also leads me to believe that that is why he is telling the truth about his chip being gone, and that the reason why he is so loyal to, or, you know, pushing the Empire thing so much and saying this, you know, good soldiers follow orders thing, is because he, you know, he feels betrayed by the Bad Batch.
He genuinely believes it.
And genuinely believes it. Yeah.
I think, too, is that we were kind of seeing the opposite of this with, like, Captain Hauser. And I think if Crosshair's chip is still inside, and this is his influenced but conscious decision that he wants to side with the Empire, it shows that it also doesn't work with Hauser. And I think that's what we expected. So it was more of the twist that it does work, even if it is or isn't gone. I don't know. I kind of agree. It really can be either which way.
Yeah, I'm not, I mean, I'm probably gonna back and forth for the next year or so, just trying to figure out,
thinking about it.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, let's move on. Yeah. So they get to the lab, and the lab's sealed off. They're trapped in there as well. So they come up with this pretty gnarly escape plan. This is very Bad Batch of them to do. Yeah. I like how it always got the radical stuff was when they, you know, they did a crazy plan and you were like, all right. And then you were like, oh, wait, this is kind of the people who would be doing this. So, but the whole medical tubes and going up to the surface, and we sort of lose AZ, he is saved as well as Omega by Crosshair, which I like that he's got good free choice to think, to do what's in the moment right
now. Yeah, but I think any of the other members of the Bad Batch would have just let AZ die.
Yeah,
and the fact that Omega sees AZ as a friend, even though he's just this, you know, this mechanical droid. It says a lot about Omega, and, you know, it says a lot about Crosshair with, you know, his reaction to save Omega. That's another reason why I sort of believe that he really doesn't have the chip.
Yeah, that's true.
But
yeah, that's a good point too. So, the episode ends where they give Crosshair the choice to go with them or not, and he decides to stay. I saw a TikTok that was day three of Crosshair still waiting for the Empire to pick him up, and it's just some dude sitting on the platform. But yeah, so they leave, and
he does that turn in the last second on Kamino.
Yeah, it was weird.
That was strange.
It was weird not seeing rain and, like,
yeah, and it not being this nighttime.
Morning, yeah. No, it was very strange. But it's a new dawn, you know.
Yeah.
It's a new era. I think a lot of things are going to be changing in this next upcoming season. So
I wonder how the planet of Kamino is going to change, or if it's ever going to be utilized in the future.
I don't know. I bet you they just kind of left it for dead. And if anything comes from it, it's maybe other Kaminoans. So,
but at that point, you know, cool. Let it be this planet for water creatures and this
remnants
life
of an old era, but nothing new has come. So. So that's kind of the end of the episode, but we get a little, final, little snippet. I guess it's like a post credit, but it plays before the credits, but, it's a pretty short scene, but it's an Imperial shuttle arriving at a giant mountain, giant mountain base. There's a base etched into the mountain. And, when it lands, it's all of the clone commandos. And there's a ton of new stuff. There's a ton of stuff that I saw kind of explaining us, but I'm kind of talking about the scene. And off the shuttle comes Nala Se from Kamino, who was the scientist that Admiral Rampart decided to keep. And we meet an Imperial scientist who wears the same garb as Dr. Pershing from The Mandalorian and the Kaminoan kind of outfit and symbol. And, you know, she talks about, we have great plans for you here.
You know what I think it is?
So I was like, here's what I've discovered, and here's kind of what I've seen. some art and early what's that word called that I would concept art, thank you. Yes, some concept art comes out, and all of its titling for the concept art has confirmed that this is the planet Wayland, and that the mountain is Mount Tantus, which is all from Heir to the Empire, which is the Thrawn, original Thrawn book. So another cool thing I noticed is that the Clone Commandos is labeled as Imperial Royal Guard, which I think is kind of an interesting thing. So I wonder if the Clone Commandos ends up transitioning as an early phase of the like Red Suit Guards.
I don't know, but I think with the whole cloning thing,
yeah,
I'm like, oh, they're definitely going to use Nala Se and, you know, her knowledge and technology for this early development for the, you know, Palpatine thing. And
I like how early it's been planned too.
I love it because I think it'll really pay off once you get to episode 9. You'll understand. I think you might feel a little bit better if you know that we did set this up with, I think we're going to see a little bit more setup with that in The Mandalorian too, with Moff Gideon and all that.
I'm just going to talk about how this kind of feels into my theory that Thrawn is going to be the one who starts the First Order. Because I think Moff Gideon works for Thrawn, and that's why Moff Gideon has newer ships. He's got, you know, folding TIE fighters. And essentially, he is responsible for initiating the First Order and this cloning process. Now, I haven't read Heir to the Empire. I'm going to after I finish Bloodline.
How close are you getting on Bloodline?
About halfway. Not really. I've got like maybe 200 pages left. Caster Foe is on Daxum 4. That's what's happening right now. All right, I'm in the gut. Some stuff has happened. But if, you know, because from what my research, Mount Tantus is all about the cloning. It's a cloning facility, or at least it's a secret lab for the Emperor. And one of the top like productions they have there is cloning.
Yeah.
But that's legend stuff. So obviously they'll change that, how that works. But this kind of plays into, I think this is how they'll introduce Thrawn. Is in the in-between years of, well, I mean, live action Thrawn is the in-between years, and how he's been, I think, secretly building the First Order since he's been gone. And not like the Empire's defeated. They're all kind of like,
maybe he is integral in not the First Order, but in the Emperor's kind of contingency with the Final Order in the Rise of Skywalker.
That's fair. Yeah, that's also a good point. I didn't necessarily consider that because he probably uses the facade of Snoke and Kylo to build the First Order so he can really ramp up Final Order stuff. Yeah, that makes sense too. I can see that as well.
Because I could see him, you know, being part of the development of those planet destroying Death Stars and that kind of thing. Not Death Stars, Star Destroyers, sorry.
Well, and that's kind of, you know, the whole lady from The Mandalorian that Ahsoka fights. Bless you.
I'm sneezing all over the place. I've been having to sneeze for like,
I keep seeing you dip away. Yeah.
I'm like, oh, you're good.
That's funny. No, she's a Starfleet designer. So that kind of gives me the reason. I think that connection is where I take it from Moff Gideon, is that like he's getting the technology to keep ramping up the Empire for the First Order. And that's how that progresses. And Thrawn is getting private designer and contractors like this woman from that Ahsoka fights. I can't think of her name.
I can't think of her name either.
Was it the magistrate they called her?
Yeah, something like that. That's actually really close. Yeah.
So, that's kind of my theories for it. How do you think we'll start season 2? What do you think? How far do you think we'll go?
Well, I really hope, I think we're probably going to do a little bit of a time jump, maybe like a year. I think we're going to see what happens to Crosshair in that jump.
Yeah.
And I think the Bad Batch, honestly, might be back with Sid. Doing stuff with Sid.
I think season two is going to be very underworld centered.
Yeah.
It's all going to be about crime lords. I think,
although I want the stakes to be really high though, if we are going to do that.
I think so too. And I think they're going to bring Maul in.
You think so?
I think not initially, and I don't think he'll be a main villain, but I think the goal is going to be the main bad guys will be Crimson Dawn, if not the Hutts, or the Pikes. because I think Roland Duran's going to come back. I think something's going to happen that's going to, I think that's going to involve Crimson Dawn, and the Batch has to, you know, fight. Maybe not fight Darth Maul, but like they get involved with that like business side of it. And I because I think this is kind of their opportunity to give us a lot of Crimson Dawn content, because there isn't a lot, you know?
Yeah.
And like Crimson Dawn in its heyday and in this era that Solo kind of hints at.
And to involve the Bad Batch in that would be really cool.
It would be really cool. Yeah, I was thinking that too, of like, it's really cool that they've that they insert the Bad Batch at very pinnacle moments. Kanan Jarrus's kind of 66 moment, the literal defeat of Kamino, like they were there, you know.
Hera saving her family, and
like the change of Ryloth, and so
a lot of integral moments.
Yeah. I think they'll kind of keep doing that and putting the Bad Batch into specific moments that we are all recognizable about, but have enough that they can still tell details and stories about it.
I think we're going to see also, I think we're going to see an older Omega. I think she'll be a little more battle worn, and I want her to have a Bad Batch armor.
Like I said, I agree. Which kind of, I think I would jump at most like 2 to 3 years. I think they have that room. Because I would assume that these are... like it's focusing on showing how the Empire has progressed. So every jump there's like new things are going on. So I could almost expect like by season two starting, you think we'll get stormtroopers, or do you think
I think
be
so? I think we'll see early stormtroopers. I think we might see like an early concept of like maybe what another the
maybe like another phase, like another like armor style that they haven't yet gotten
it would,
to.
It would be kind of cool. Also, I don't know if this would be. No, probably not. But I don't know if there's a way they could tie in with Kenobi, because it would be releasing around that time.
That's kind of what I was That'd thinking cool. too. Was
maybe,
like
maybe if they tie in with Andor would be even really cool too.
That'd be cool. That'd be cool. Yeah, I don't know. I think there's a lot that's going to be coming. I think there's some plots that they're setting up that are going to be really fun and are going to bring the show to its own.
I think they're really going to dig. I think they're going to dig more deep into the cloning thing too, with Nalase and her fate.
Yeah, kind of explain where that's going. So. Thank you guys for listening. This has been a fun show, and while there won't be any more episodes for the time being, we will obviously pick it back up when season two starts, whenever that may be, probably next year at some point. Check out our normal news show, which is always released on Thursdays, and you can follow us on our social medias. Our Instagram is at Through Imperial Podcast, and then Through Imperialize Podcast, and then our Twitter is at Imperialize Pod.
You almost got it.
I turned off my thing and I realized that I still needed to do it.
Instagram is at Through Imperialize Pod. Twitter is at Imperialize Pod. YouTube is Through Imperialize Podcast. There you go.
Yeah. And you can always look us up on Spotify or Apple Music or Anchor, where we also are at as well. Give us a shout out, talk to us, send us reviews, give us a like, you know, don't be shy about hanging out and telling us how cool we are. We know it's fun. You can follow me on Twitter at Quaxon Scaling. That's Quaxson, and scaling like the triangle. And then follow my photography Instagram, which is at Daleen, Daleen _ photography. Braden, what about you? What are your socials?
As always, you can find me on the Instagrams at Braden Ledbetter, and on Twitter at Braidethlon, and on Letterboxd, see what I'm watching, see what I'm reviewing, at B Ledbetter.
Ruby. Well, thank you guys. We love that we were able to get through all of this together, and you know, we'll be back for season two for more of the Batch Report. But until then, may the Force be with you.
Always.